Verse again, Atanityam Anityam Va Neha Shuchanti Tarvida Nanyata Shakyate Kartum Swabhava Shuchatam Iti. Those who have full knowledge of self-realization, who know very well that the spirit soul is eternal, whereas the body is perishable, are not overwhelmed by lamentation. But persons who lack knowledge of self-realization certainly lament. Therefore, it is difficult to educate a person in illusion. So who is speaking here? Does anyone know? Huh? Lord Brahma? Okay. Yeah, Srimad Bhagavatam is very complicated. Conversation inside of a conversation, inside of a conversation about a side conversation that's taking place within a conversation. So it's very easy to get confused. Ultimately, who's speaking to who? In one sense, Aranyakashipu is speaking at this point. But he's telling a story. Anyone know what story? Who's speaking? Huh? Yeah, there's a child speaking. But who is that child? Yamaraj. And Yamaraj is speaking to? Yeah, the queens. Queens of, what's his name? Sarvagya or something like that. Sayujgya. Yeah, so Yamaraj is speaking to the queens. And this is being also conveyed in a conversation between Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj. And this is Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj are speaking the Rajasuya sacrifice, where Yudhisthira has just seen Shishupal merge into the body of Krishna, and he's wondering how Shishupal has attained that sort of liberation, you know, that he's got to merge. He's such an enemy of Krishna, and somehow he's been able to merge into the body of Krishna, whereas so many transcendentalists may have to take birth, you know, again and again and again in order to, you know, finally achieve such a merging liberation. And this conversation is being spoken between Narada Muni and Yudhisthira Maharaj because Parikshit Maharaj has asked a question. Anyone knows what the question is that Parikshit Maharaj has asked? The beginning of the seventh canto, after Vishnu or Krishna has assisted Lord Indra in defeating the demons, right, Parikshit Maharaj is saying, wait a minute, I thought God was impartial. So if God is impartial, then why is he taking the side of the demigods and defeating the demons? How can someone be impartial if they're taking one side over another? And Parikshit Maharaj, Shukadev Goswami becomes ecstatic. He says, oh, thank you for asking such a nice question. This will give me the opportunity to speak about Krishna and the Supreme Lord and reveal some wonderful pastimes, and specifically the pastime that he reveals in this this volume of the Bhagavatam. Seventh canto is entitled, anyone know? If I'm not mistaken, it's entitled The Science of God. So, and in this, almost this entire canto is dedicated to the pastime of Lord Nisringadev, Aranyakashipu, Parikshit Maharaj, or Prahlad Maharaj. And specifically this question being asked at the very beginning by Parikshit Maharaj, wanting to know about the impartiality of the Lord. And then he begins by narrating how this impartiality, we can see that even a demon like Shishupal got to merge into the body of Krishna. So it's not just that the demigods are achieving liberation like this, or the demigods are being protected by Krishna. But even a demon such as Shishupal, and Shishupal was it Shishupal who was cursing Krishna from the day that he was born, right? Anyone know anyone like that? Cursing God from day one. I think he had certain amount, how many was it, curses he was allowed? 100. 100 blasphemies of God. And then it was in the Rajasuya sacrifice that he finally dished out his final, his last blasphemy. And Krishna sent to Sudarshan Chakra. So like this, this conversation, and then within that, Narada Muni begins to tell the pastime of Hiranyaksha and Hiranyakashipu, starting with Jai and Vijay in Vaikuntha Loka at the gates, who inadvertently committed an offense at the lotus feet of the four Kumaras, and because of that offense, they had to take birth. But they didn't have to. They were given a choice. They had to take birth, but they didn't have to take birth as demons. But they had a choice. They could either take birth as devotees for how many lives? 7 lives. Or they could take birth as demons for 3. And they opted for the 3. So it's interesting, because if it wasn't for these devotees who were cursed in this situation, then we wouldn't have this pastime of Hiranyakashipu. And without Hiranyakashipu appearing, then we wouldn't have the appearance of Lord Nisringadev and the pastime of Prahlad Maharaj. So these kind of opens up the topic of what is good and what is bad. Being in a world of duality, we have a tendency to assess and judge things on material merits or materialistic mindset or our own perception of what feels good or what looks good or what seems to be right or what seems to be wrong. But we see here that even in the 6th canto, the pastime of Lord Indra defeating Vritrasura. It's hard to know who you think Vritrasura is, some huge demon, but who is Vritrasura? He's King Chitraketu, who's a pure devotee, who was cursed by Parvati. A lot of cursing going on in the Bhagavatam. A lot of people getting zapped. So we can see that sometimes even we may get zapped, right? Seems like the material energy may zap us, or something may happen to us where we seem or feel that maybe this isn't justified, or maybe this isn't correct, or this isn't what should be happening to me, right? King Chitraketu, he had just had the darshan of the Lord. He's flying around his aerial mansion with his 10,000 wives, enjoying heavenly pleasures. And the next thing you know, he's like in the body of a, you know, demon, having his head chopped off by Lord Indra's thunderbolt. Who thinks that's fair? Srinivas Prabhu, he's into it. He's like, yeah, give it to him, you know. Give it to the pure devotee. Zap him good. So the thing is that there will be many tests. Especially the closer we get to Krishna, then we should expect the unexpected. Right? We should expect that there will be many opportunities to practice tolerance, humility, patience, or as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explains, the opportunity to respect others and not expect any respect in return. Srila Prabhupada, I often quote this because it's my favorite definition of the word tolerance that Srila Prabhupada gives in the 13th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Text number 8, where he explains that tolerance means that one should be practiced to bear insult. So this is the definition that Srila Prabhupada gives of tolerance. And then he explains further in the purport that anyone who takes up spiritual life will have many opportunities to practice tolerance. Because there will be many opportunities for insult or purification. We often use this term. I think someone said to me earlier, I asked them how they were. They said, I'm getting purified. Anyone feels like that sometimes? I'm getting purified. Very often when devotees say they're getting purified, they don't smile when they say it. But you would think if you're impure and the goal is to become pure, then when you're getting purified, you should be like, Prabhu, I am getting purified like anything. It's so good. I love it. But because the process of purification sometimes means that the heat gets turned up. And Prabhupada would often give this example that one has to become like fire. In order to become like fire, one has to put the rod in fire. And then the iron rod, after being in fire for so long, first it begins to look like fire, becomes hot like fire, and then Prabhupada said eventually it becomes fire. But the difficulty is that we put the rod in fire, it gets a little hot, and we take the rod out of the fire for a little while. Then we think, oh, I better put it back in the fire and then take it out of the fire. Another example that's given is, in order to make a sword, a very good sword, then one has to bend the metal over and over, flatten it very, very thin, and then bend it over, flatten that thin, bend it again, flatten it thin and thin and thin, until finally you've got this sword that's very sleek, but it's like layer upon layer upon layer of metal that's just been heated and pounded into proper shape and form. So the process of purification doesn't necessarily always feel appealing, but ultimately it's what's meant to be happening, isn't it? This process of purification. So sometimes we can assess or judge a situation in such a way that we think this isn't good, or this is bad, or this is wrong, or this shouldn't be happening to me. Maybe it should be happening to him. Or her, right? But definitely not to me. But how do we know what is right and wrong? We live in a world of duality, and when we submit ourselves and surrender to the process of Krishna consciousness, giving ourselves up to the mercy of Guru and Krishna, then it's explained that Krishna is ultimately taking care of us, that Krishna is looking after us. And anything that is occurring to us is simply coming ultimately by His mercy. It's so sweet. We're reading in the 10th canto at the moment, and just finishing off the pastime where Mother Yashoda has looked into Krishna's mouth and she's seen the entire universe. And she becomes completely bewildered and she doesn't know what's going on. And she's thinking, am I ill? Have I been overcome by the denizens of heaven? Or am I being bewitched by some lower life forms? Or what's happening? And because she won't accept the fact that Krishna is God, but she can't find any other reason. And so she ultimately just accepts that it must be the divine will of Narayan, of Vishnu, which is an interesting point that in Vrindavan everyone worships Narayan, right? They're not worshiping Krishna in Braj, right? Everyone is loving Krishna, but their approach to God is they see that Narayan is the Supreme Lord, right? Because they don't understand Krishna is God because they're in Yoga Maya. But Mother Yashoda, or Prabhupada says in that purport, that because ultimately one can't, even if one can't track out the cause of something, the reason why something has happened to me, or the reason for my suffering, then one has to ultimately accept that the reason is sarva karana karanam, right? What's the beginning of that verse? What? Ishwara Krishna. Ishwara Parama Krishna Satchitananda Vigraha Anadir Adir Govinda Sarva Karna Karna. That Krishna is the ultimate cause of everything. So if Krishna is the ultimate cause, then that means ultimately it must be good. Right? Because Krishna is ultimately the ultimate good. Everything that he does is ultimately correct. The difficulty is that we're in mindset of duality, and therefore it becomes very, very difficult for us to find the positive or find Krishna in everything that happens. Even something that may seem completely atrocious. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nanda Ki Jai Sitaram Lachman Hanuman Ji Ki Jai Shri Shri Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. So in this pastime, we have another interesting dichotomy is that Hiranyakashipu, he's speaking deep philosophy. Hiranyakashipu is speaking this deep philosophy and telling this story about Yamaraj, who came to console the queens of the queens of Suyogya. Because this body, the body of Suyogya after death, although it was dead body, it wanted to be, needed to be taken away to the funeral pyre. But the queens were lamenting over the king so much that they wouldn't let the body go. They were just holding on to this body. So Yamaraj came as a little boy in order to instruct the queens that this is madness, what you're doing. Because, you know, the soul is left, the body, and now the body is just dead body, but you're still so attached to it. And then begins speaking this this philosophy, as we see in this verse, saying that actually one who understands this process of self-realization, there is no lamentation. One who is actually versed in the science of self-realization, there is no lamentation. Susukam kartam avyayam. And Srila Prabhupada would often say that devotional service is performed joyfully. And if you're not happy in Krishna consciousness, then it means you're doing something wrong. Because we should be joyful. The process of devotional service is a joyful one because it's a constant, never-ending process of self-realization, of awakening, of reawakening a deeper understanding of who we are and our relationship with Krishna, which is joyful. So it means each and every day, each and every hour, each and every minute should be one of a joyful experience of a reawakening of my relationship with Krishna, which doesn't really leave much room for lamentation. Lamentation is reserved for those parties who are connected or deeply attached to the temporary nature of the material world, forgetting the ultimate understanding of ourselves as spiritual beings who are eternal, nityam. In this verse, nitya anityam, Prabhupada explains the philosophy of the Mimamsas and the Sankhyas. But we understand that we're eternally spirit souls, servants of Krishna. And we hear this. How many times have you heard you're not the body? Can someone tell me? Mataji, how many times have you heard you're not the body? Innumerable. Thousands of times, right? Thousands of times. Who here listens to Srila Prabhupada's lectures? Anyone? Yeah. Is this a main theme of Srila Prabhupada's lectures? Yeah. You're not the body, you're not the body. In fact, some people seem to get tired of hearing, I'm not the body, right? But we were hearing just yesterday, actually, that, you know, one shouldn't, if one becomes tired of hearing you're not the body, then there's probably some problem. One should never get tired of it. We should want to be constantly reminded, because we'll hear it right now in this class. We're talking, Yamaraj is spoken, everyone's speaking, we're not the body, and we'll walk out of here and immediately we'll begin acting like bodies. And we'll also be treating everyone else like bodies, forgetting the ultimate spiritual spark that resides within that body. And we'll be treating, oh, this is Joe, he acts like this, he's like that, he did this. Completely forgetting the connection of that soul to Krishna. That each and every person is a divine spark of Krishna's amazing splendor. That each and every individual that we encounter and interact with is a wonderful representation of an aspect of Krishna's personality. That's a part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. When we interact with someone, do we approach and interact and communicate with someone on the level of the soul, or do we just interact and communicate on the level of the body? Because ultimately we're hearing so much philosophy all the time, but ultimately we have to put these things into practice. So how do we do that? It means that we have to consciously call up the intelligence, right, in a situation when we're interacting with someone and act upon that intelligence. Otherwise, it's just like, you know, having a library with lots of knowledge, but you never read the books. So all the knowledge and all the wisdom is at your disposal, but you never actually make any use of it. And the difficulty is that, as Prabhupada said, you could go on for thousands of lifetimes chanting Hare Krishna. So it's not just that by chanting Hare Krishna, of course, ultimately, I think it's explained, ultimately we'll be dragged to the ultimate destination. But it's not just that simply by mechanically acting in a way that's like, oh yeah, I know this, I already heard this, I heard this so many times. Yeah, so we hear so many things so many times, but do we act on it? Do we actually do something about it? Do we imbibe it so much into our lives that we genuinely call it to the forefront of our consciousness in an interaction? Or when we realize that we're acting in an inappropriate way, do we stop and say, wait a minute? Or the example that was given earlier, or here, when lamentation, has anyone ever felt lamentation? No one? God, I'm sorry, I'm preaching to the choir here, wrong group. Or I'm preaching to myself, being a lamenting fool. So, you know, when lamentation comes upon us, you know that feeling, it feels like something grabs you from the bottom and pulls you down, right? And just like, ooh, I'll never get out. Oh, why did I, you know, this? How could I have that? Oh, woe is me. You know, when we get stuck in that rut, it's like when your wheels are spinning in the mud and you can't seem to move forward. Somehow we have to, like, call upon the intelligence and the knowledge that helps us to understand, wait a minute, what am I doing, you know? I just have to move forward. Or the benefit of being in the association of devotees is that we have friends, close friends around us who see that we're stuck in the mud and they're like, hey, wake up, what are you doing? They come and assist us and help us to move out of that. Again, by using the fulcrum, right? Everyone knows what a fulcrum is, a lever, right? Leverage, using the leverage of the knowledge of Krishna consciousness, the wisdom that is so, you know, we're reading every day, hearing every day. It has to be something that we practically apply, otherwise it just becomes like old toys sitting in the attic collecting dust. And the most basic principle is understanding that we're not these bodies. And that's what's being spoken here to the lamenting queens. Their husband, Hiranyaksha, has left his body, and they're just crying and crying and crying, lamenting and lamenting and lamenting. And Krishna gives the same advice to Arjuna, right? He says, what are you lamenting for? You're lamenting for something that isn't even worthy of lamenting, right? Don't you see, can you understand that all these bodies, they're ultimately going to die anyway. They're ultimately going to pass. But where does compassion come in when we don't lament? Like, has anyone had a loved one pass away, or know someone who's had a loved one pass away, and you feel this lamentation, or you see others lamenting, you know, someone's lamenting because someone has left their body, and you go up and say, hey, what are you crying for? Don't be a fool. Right? They're not the body, the soul's gone. Don't worry. Seems to be there has to be some kind of balance, right? It's not exactly that the philosophy has to be applied according to kala, desha, patra, time, place, and circumstance. So it's not that you can just go and sling someone out of that mode, but you're there with knowledge, comforting, encouraging, helping, assisting, and when the time is right, you're able to help them give that knowledge. It's like if you use a lever, you jack up a car, you can't just stick the jack in anywhere. You have to put it in the right place at the right time. Everything has to occur properly. So it's not just that you can go with the lever and smack the car over the top or smack a person over the head. You have to put it in the right place at the right time and use it properly. Again, application of the philosophy. Like this. So it's almost 8:30. I'll see if anyone has any questions. I know devotees often have questions or comments or corrections. Please, anyone?